Welcome to the Legacy Podcast. This podcast is a series of conversations centered around understanding the values, beliefs, and intentions behind leaving a legacy. You will hear from successful business owners just like yourself who want to leave an impact for generations to come. Let's get started. Welcome to the Business Legacy Podcast. My name is Paul Diu. I'm your host, and we have a very special guest, Robert Nickel of Rocket Station. He is founder and CEO, and I'm really excited because not often do we get someone that's a little bit on the younger side that thinks about legacy. So I'm looking forward to hearing your perspective. So welcome, Robert.
Paul, super appreciate being here. I love your show. I've listened to several episodes. I love the process of getting enrolled on your show. We are a big system and process documentation, have a way of doing things, and then we know what success looks like. That's we believe in that. And so your process of enrolling in the show and the pre-show notes and all the videos and all the structure that you have was awesome, because that's the way we operate in a very similar fashion. So it's fun to not only be on your show, I appreciate you very much, but it's kind of fun to see behind the scenes and how you do things, which is super cool. So appreciate you, man.
Appreciate you. So tell us a little bit about Rocket Station and the backstory behind it. I know about it in doing research in you, but why don't you let our listeners in on what Rocket Station is?
Yeah, we do two things. And, you know, you hear about entrepreneurs. I just got back from a mastermind, and several of these amazing entrepreneurs are presenting, and they have like 10 companies that do all these different things. That's not me, and that's not Rocket Station. I'm kind of a very focused person. And so at Rocket Station, we only do two things. And Rocket Station at this point is kind of my only thing that I'm focused on. So it's kind of where all my energy and passion and effort goes to. And we do two things as a company. We do system and process documentation. So we, long before we ever want to hire somebody or put employees in place, that just creates anxiety, that creates fear, that creates lack of clarity around what success looks like. And that creates a lot of animosity for both management and employees. So instead of hiring people first and throwing them in to the fire, we want to document systems and processes, create training manuals, create really detailed scope of work for every task that's happening in the organization. So that's the first thing we do, is beautiful scopes, training manuals, all the foundational materials it takes for any employee to be successful and any company to have clarity and alignment across the board. So that's the first thing we do, is system and process documentation. And then we're dedicated virtual staff. It's not a 1099. It's not a W-2. It's just a service agreement between your company and ours. So there are employees, get full benefits. We really invest in our teams and create a lot of stability and security. And as a result, we get an amazing workforce for our clients that functions just like an employee, but there's no HR, no liability. So we do system and process documentation, and then we're dedicated virtual teams. And those are our virtual assistants, as most people have heard of it. So those are the only two things that we do.
Interesting. When it comes to documenting the system and process, I'm sure that there are some of your clients who've never documented before, never written anything down.
If they're like me, they are. Yeah. So that was kind of my journey, is I was doing a few real estate transactions a month in my business, and I was looking to do more, but I was working so many hours, and I knew the only way I could do any more and was to get some help and hire some people. And you talk about legacy in the podcast, and you say, you know, you mentioned before we even started that it's, you know, I'm young to be thinking about legacy. But Paul, I didn't start my business to be on Facebook at 4 a.m. getting a workout and posting about it, because it's the only time that I could get my personal things in. Like, I wasn't starting a business so that I was in this hustle and grind and never had. No, I wanted to hang out with my nephews. I wanted to do things with my friends when they went. Like, it was from the very beginning, I wanted a business that served the life that I was looking to create, not go serve a business. And that's what I was doing. I was working so many hours, and I was serving the business every day. And I was just felt like a slave to the business. And it didn't matter what it was. The phone was ringing, I was answering it. If the emails came through, I was responding. If, you know, closings were happening, I was there. I was at the meeting with sellers. I was sales. I was doing everything in my business. And so I knew that I had to hire people to, and I know you asked me about systems and processes, but I the first thing that I did, I failed in this process over and over again, because I would go hire people, throw them into the business, they would not have a lot of success. And then I was miserable as the manager. And I'd say things like, oh man, hiring people is so hard. And it's so hard to find the right person and motivate people. Like all that, I'm making all these excuses about how it's hard to hire people. And I had some great mentors, fortunately, that showed me pretty quick that I was the problem. And a big part of that problem was I didn't have any structure for team members to come in and be successful for them. They didn't know what the expectations were and how to communicate and how to perform their tasks and how to do the day-to-day. So as I'm driving into the office feeling frustrated and annoyed that I'm going to have to be the one to teach them how to do their job, and it feels like I'm doing everything twice, you know, I'm doing all this mopey stuff about, you know, being a manager, they're driving, the team members are driving to the office feeling anxiety and fear and all these things, because they don't really know what's expected of them and how to do it. And they're just hoping that through osmosis or time or whatever, that they're going to learn their job. So I really wanted to solve that problem. I think that people want to be successful. I think people want to do a good job. I think people want to be fulfilled in their day to day. And for me, one of the solutions to that problem was having everything documented in the business. If the phone rings, what do you say? I knew what to say when I answered. It was easy for me to just have a conversation. I knew what I was supposed to do, but somebody new, somebody that's learning, like they need some instruction. They need some guidance. They want to know how you want them to answer the phone. If it's, you know, an inside salesperson, or if it's going to be bookkeeping, they need to have some clarity around how to keep the books clean and social media management or whatever the task is. If you have documented systems and processes, now someone can come in and perform those tasks and know it's that, and just be excited about coming in and performing their job instead of feeling fear. So a lot of these things that I figured out about how to hire and manage people mostly came from my struggles as an entrepreneur, trying to just solve these problems. I never slowed down enough to put enough structure, like systems and processes, in place. And then I blamed it on my team members. So yeah, it's kind of this long journey of I wish I just could read a book and have all the answers, Paul, but I have to get my teeth kicked in and kind of learn the hard way and struggle and grind to kind of figure this stuff out.
Yeah. Going back to the real estate, what were some of the things that you were doing that are now outsourced, or that you noticed that were outsourced that you were doing on yourself?
Yeah. So for my business, the first person that I hired outsourced was somebody to answer the phones, because I was doing a lot of mail and I went, you know, putting signs everywhere for on both retail and investing. So I was both had my license as an agent and was a real estate investor. And that was my primary focus, was flipping properties. But so I was doing, you know, thousands, up to 100,000 postcards a month. I was doing lots of different ways to get the phone, different things to get the phone to ring from a marketing standpoint. And so I would be on listing appointments while my phone is blowing up and going crazy and getting all these voicemails and all these things were happening that I'd miss calls. And really what I ended up doing was just kind of scraping the cream from the top, meaning like the people who are kind of lay down leads, hey, I'm ready to sell my house.
Yep.
I would get to those people, but everybody else, I was kind of like barely. And to be totally candid with you, I hired somebody and they were not very good. They weren't, and most people talk about English proficiency. Like, yes, English proficiency is huge when you're outsourcing. Yes, you want that person to sound and feel like they're sitting right there in your office. But what I learned in that first hire, because Dennis had an amazing English accent, he spoke perfect English, but he was not a very good communicator. He wasn't good at building a relationship on the phone. He wasn't very good at empathy. He wasn't very good at kind of figuring out how to have a nuanced conversation. But even still, Paul, even with him being terrible on the phones, I was going on more appointments, more showings, and I was doing more deals immediately by just having him answer the phone. So that was my real light bulb, my big aha moment in my own personal business. Because I was doing every time the phone rang, I had to answer it. every time something happened, I had to do it because it was so important. If somebody screwed it up, I would look bad. And I was the bottleneck with every single thing in my business. And that's why I was working 80, 90 hours a week. And so in that moment, that month where I'm doing more transactions, making more money with somebody that's terrible on the phones, I was like, what if they were just marginally good? What if they were just decent? And what if I got some help in a few other areas? What could I do if I just focused on meeting with sellers all day long? What would that do for me instead of doing all these other things? And, you know, people, they do all these presentations about highest and best use of your time and only do the $2,000 an hour task or $10,000. Like, it's easy to say that, but what does that actually mean? Because for most of us, after I hear that, I don't go home and look in my bank account and every hour there's another $2,000 in it. So there's like this big disconnect. But for me in that moment, when I'm doing more deals and going, oh no, they're terrible talking to these people that represent me, you know, and my name and my brand and my company, who cares? It's like the mission. We're progressing. We're having more success. So again, I wish I could say I just like had some great idea, but I just learned through a little bit of that grind and that fear and that emotional roller coaster that I think we all ride as entrepreneurs. That for me was my big aha moment as far as outsourcing and delegating and knowing that this could be an amazing thing for my business and my personal life and people I cared about. And my entire thing was just getting a little bit of support that was at just, you know, marginal at worst instead of, you know, terrible at best. And then, man, business could be good. So that was my big aha moment with outsourcing.
Now, it seems like you like the problem solving. It seems like you enjoy the grind, not enjoy the grind, but the adjusting. Where did you get that from? Did you always think you had an entrepreneurial mindset?
So I always grew up thinking that I had an entrepreneurial mindset. Yes, from little bitty. And my parents are strong entrepreneurs. My dad was a dentist, but he has two different doctorates. He's a PhD in math, plus he's a dentist. And my mom is super creative as an artist. And they're always coming up with different business ideas. So even when my dad was a dentist, my mom would open a laundromat in the local town, or she would always be teaching art classes, or she had some kind of businesses going. And one of those was always flipping houses. They always had a project going at all times, usually just one house at a time. It's not like, you know, they try to make it look on TV, like they were literally just one project at a time. And so I always had the entrepreneur bug. I wish I always had the grind and the grit. What I wanted, Paul, was I wanted my parents to have some kind of cool business that I could take over and just kind of run. And I wanted it to just be easy is what I really wanted. But fortunately, the luckiest guy in the world, we grew up with amazing parents who that's not how it worked at all for us. So in my parents' household, their money was their money. And we were just lucky to live with them in their environment under their roof, which was absolutely the case. We were super lucky. And what that meant was I got through college with no debt and my parents paid for our stuff. And then we had to just kind of figure it out from there. And so I feel super fortunate, Paul, that my parents forced us to go and create our own path in our own way. I mean, we were very middle class. We didn't have money. We weren't poor, but we didn't have tons of money. But my parents had no interest in just setting us, you know, just giving us anything. And so that was one of the biggest gifts of my life, was having parents that loved me and cared about me, created a stable environment. And part of that was forcing me to go earn it and work at it on my own. And you mentioned you seem like I love the grind. Well, I do now. And that's been a learned thing for me. At the beginning, it wasn't something that I was really excited about. But now, you know, like I think David Goggins, somebody said, embrace the suck. And I hope it's okay I said that. But that at this point, I kind of do. The beauty in the process is in that grind, because that's where all the real learning is. That's where all the education happens. That's where, you know, the real magic is. And that's why I'm so proud of our team, because we, you know, I get all these notifications, 5-year anniversaries, 6-year anniversaries from our team members. And it's like the knowledge of what they have and the database in their heads and the cumulative power of what the team is putting together comes from that grind and that struggle in the day. So I do really embrace that now, but it's not always something that I was super into. I wish it was that. I wish I was just, you know, born with that type of mental fortitude, but it was something that I had to learn and grow into.
Now, you mentioned a couple of things that I'll bring up, which is your parents said that their money is their money and then that your decision is your decision. So what's your view on money in your life?
Yeah. So for me, money is a tool. It's a resource. And it's just this idea of passive income. I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad when I was in fourth grade. I have older siblings. My oldest brother brought that book home. And he also asked my mom to buy the cash flow game. And I don't know if anybody's ever played that, but it's basically a recreation of Monopoly through Rich Dad, Poor Dad, where you learn about investing and passive income and what an asset versus a liability is. So I was really young and interested in this idea of passive income. And to talk about how shallow I was at that time, but he talked about his Porsche that real estate paid for, you know, from a passive standpoint. So he didn't just go draw from his bank account and buy a Porsche. His real estate that he had paid for this Porsche. So to him, you know, he described it basically as this free Porsche that he got from his real estate. And that concept, that sounded like freedom. That sounded like, man, you can do whatever you want with whoever you want, wherever you want. Like that idea of freedom is what I really tied money to. That to me is what it really was about. I mean, you know, I'm talking about the Porsche, but it's not really about the Porsche. I don't care about, you know, big fancy things. I don't have a big house. I don't have a bunch of cars. I don't have fancy stuff, even though those things are great. I think it's cool. You know, those things are super fun, whatever. But to me, that wasn't my connection to money. My connection to money was freedom. And like, you know, you talked about my parents. A young age, and it's summertime, and my friends were wanting to go to the movies and go to dinner to go to Chili's afterwards. And my mom wasn't. She said, "You know, your dad's not going to work all summer long and bust his butt for you to go to the movies and dinner and hang out with your friends. Y'all can play here. You got whatever. We've got dinner cooked. There's tons of stuff for you to do. But just like handing money to just go do like." And so I learned at a young age that I've got to go earn it. And so I got a job when I was 15, because in the state of Texas, you have to be 16 to get a job. But the local guy at the ice cream shop gave me a job at 15 and he paid me cash under the table. And that was my first real job besides mowing yards and selling popsicles and all the stuff I did as a kid. But my first real job. And that really changed money for me, Paul, because when I was making $5.15 an hour, and I would work all day long. At the end of the summer, I looked at my bank account and it was insane, right? So I never looked at buying a CD. You know, at the time a new CD came out, and it was $15 to $18. That was 3 hours of me scooping ice cream. Mm-hmm. And like, I didn't want to go scoop a three. So it's like I went from basically being entitled to money because I didn't really understand it, actually going and working and making $5.15 an hour for a long time. And really having this different kind of appreciation for what it takes to accumulate money. But it was all tied to this idea of if I could figure out a way to get some kind of passive income or get enough money, it would be about freedom, leveraging that to get my own time way more than about like stuff or fancy things or whatever. So that's, I don't know if that answers your question directly, but that's my very candid answer of my attachments to money.
It does. It's funny how sometimes we reframe things in the way that you did, where it's a CD is 3 hours worth of scooping ice cream. Yeah, it's helpful to create those visuals. That way you kind of realize the value of your time and you made a decision, not, you know, 3 hours isn't worth me listening to a CD,
but I only liked one song on the dumb CD.
Yeah, anyways, definitely.
Right,
definitely,
and yeah. So yeah, it did. It totally changed, and that's what I mean about being lucky. My parents forced us to go figure it out and earn, whether it's from school, whether it's our personal relationships, whether it's work. I mean, the blessing was giving us a stable found. We always knew where our parents were. They were at every game we ever did. Big sports family. You know, we had all the stability in the world, and then pushed out of the nest to go figure it out. Mm-hmm. And that grind you've mentioned a few times in a few different ways. Again, that is something just like I now appreciate and I learned to appreciate, but I had to be forced and kicked, and I was screaming, scratching, crawling, doing everything I could to not, you know, embrace that journey.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's inspiring to listeners that may feel as though that, you know, maybe I'm just, you know, not built that way, versus you learned how to enjoy it. You learned how to be a person that goes towards something rather than just completely go around it, if you will.
Yeah, I don't know if inspiring is, you know, that's a big word to call somebody. I appreciate that. But yeah, it's like people want to talk about this entrepreneur thing and being a business owner as if it's some like sexy, magical thing, whatever. You know, I don't know the word to put it, but we really glorify entrepreneurship and we really glorify business and here in the US, and that is a good thing. I'm a capitalist all the way through and through, but at the same time, like there's a lot of things that aren't super sexy. I mean, I sacrificed a lot of things early on in my personal life that looking back didn't make a lot of sense. And I spent a lot of money and reinvesting it back in the business instead of taking some chips on the table in ways that weren't very responsible early on. And I had my foot on the gas calculating upside way more than calculating downside or risk early on in a lot of ways. And so those lessons that I learned through going through the process, that to me is part of the entrepreneur journey, and those struggles and those grinds and that process. Man, like that's the greatest education there is. And that's what gives me all my personal confidence and decision-making and things I'm doing next. And why I feel so good and secure and content with my decision-making is because I've been there, I've done it in a lot of ways. And so making decisions about what we're doing as a company or moving forward, it can be done in confidence because I have embraced that grind and that process. So that is just kind of how I look at entrepreneurship, is those that are willing to embrace that suck. It's an amazing journey but it's definitely not for everybody.
Yeah. That dovetails right into my next question, which is out of the years that you've worked since you were 15, what would you consider your best decision that you've made?
So yeah, I had to really do some personal development, some personal work to really get out of my own way. And, you know, you hear that you only have so many hours in the day, but if you want to do anything and it be big and it have impact and it impact lives and have, you know, legacy, like the name of your podcast, to me, that's done through other people. And there's a smart guy named Scott Galloway who says that success is in the agency of others. And to me, that couldn't summarize the way I feel any better. Like success is in the agency of others. We have an amazing organization at Rocket Station, but it really doesn't have anything to do with me. It was my initial vision and my initial idea and some of my initial concepts through my crappy business that I was running that needed a bunch of help. Like that's where all the concepts came from. But what it is today is an amazing organization. But that amazing organization, the fabric, the culture, all the things that make it amazing isn't because of me. It's because of all the team members that have bought in and buy in every single day and show up and perform and exceed expectations. So, I mean, I am just a very, very small piece of what we do, and that is why we are successful, and that is why. And early on, my ego was way too big to really step out of the way and make really good decisions and empower other people. And through that empowerment of other people and getting myself out of the way and removing myself as the bottleneck, that's what really allowed us to grow and expand and scale, and then have all the impact that I wanted and was looking for at the beginning. So imagine that. So that was kind of for me. I don't know if it's the same for anybody else, but for me, that was kind of the thing that helped kind of take the business to the next level, which improved my personal life, was removing myself from the process and empowering other people to do what they're supposed to do. And all of a sudden, everything kind of started working out from there.
I like that. I love it. Be the agency. Success is the agency, being the agency of other people. That's going to go up. Now, what would you say is your worst decision? There may not be one, but one that kind of stings and sticks out.
Oh man, I've made lots of bad decisions. Some of that sting are, you know, early on, we took a lot of clients on. When I say we, I'm using that like I took a lot of clients on that weren't a core value fit. They really weren't what, and the amount of time, effort, emotional energy we put towards that, the only large, you know, like the only really like significant issue we've ever had with any sizable client came from somebody we never should have brought on to begin with. And it was just me chasing things I shouldn't. So all my bad decisions come from, you know, our core values as a company are exceed expectations. We have fun. And if we're doing something that's outside of our core values, then it's a bet. It never works out. And early on when I, you know, we didn't have as much revenue and, you know, we were trying to figure out how to meet payroll and invest in marketing and do all these things. It's like, we were willing to sacrifice sometimes with who we brought on as clients, who were we were willing to work with, who I spent time with. And for me, that especially early on created so much drag emotionally for me personally, that it really stunted our growth. So while I chased revenue away from our core values, it really created the opposite effect for us, because now we've got, you know, squeaky wheel gets the grease. And so we've got all our attention where it doesn't really belong. And so for me, that's, I don't know if that's a good answer or not, but that was kind of allowing people in our space that shouldn't have been there was probably my biggest issue early on.
Mm-hmm. And we've heard that where usually the admission or the ability to look back and do like a post-op autopsy report where you're like, okay, why did we take this person on? What are some of the things that we don't like about this person, and how can we set up systems and processes in place to make sure that we're not in a position where we're taking on someone, which is sucking up all our time.
Yeah, we're not for everybody. We're just for those where it's a perfect win-win fit. And we want to help anybody. I've gotten to the point where I actually don't care whether anybody hires us or not or uses our teams. But if we can provide any value, the foundation of our clients, our core client base is small to mid-sized companies across the US. And to me, that's the foundation and the backbone of America. And any way we can support the small to mid-sized businesses from real estate to any other industry that we're working with, that is, I'm all about that. But if it's the right fit, then great. We can create a business relationship. But, mm-hmm. you know, early on when you need money, it's harder to say that, but it is the truth. It will definitely change your business working with the right customers.
Do you have any interesting stories that you'd like to share or things where, you know, a business owner was in this place, and then based on when you were brought in, here's the trajectory of where they went. Do you have anything that you'd like to share with the audience?
Yeah, I think I can share a couple. Like most people initially, when you think about virtual assistants or outsourcing, you're usually thinking about like cost savings or, you know, what you can get back at from an expense standpoint, or hopefully create some more revenue, which is great. And that is why a lot of people come to us. And I'll share a couple stories about people that are doing better with the business. But I think what is really cool is that people stay with us for a long time. And we have accounts that have been with us for well over 3 years with the same team members. And so why does that really work and why do they stick? Yes, the businesses do better, but we had a business, you know, there's a company in Salt Lake, and a guy pulls up to his office one morning and it's snowing like crazy in this blizzard. And he's the only car there. And he goes in, and most of his team, you know, they have kids and schools in the morning, buses couldn't run. So people couldn't show up in the office. And he sent me a text that said, you know, we team members have to do what they got to do. People have to take care of their families. We want to support them, but it creates a lot of anxiety for me as the business owner when we have these things happen. And I'm not sure how we're going to go in and answer the phones and respond. And we can't just be closed for the day. I didn't know what we were going to do. And we logged in, and every single one of our team members through Rocket Station was logged in and ready to go. And there's no disruption in the day. Mm. And it wasn't about the lack of disruption. What it was about was the emotional energy and capacity he got back as the business owner for knowing that we had their back in the day to day. And so that they were going to get all the success, all the performance, they were going to get all the outcomes that they were expecting and deserved to have in the business. So that support through teams that you get through stable, productive, amazing virtual teams, the emotional energy you get back as a business owner, that is what creates the stick. That's what creates the long-term value there. But we've got some great examples of a company in Jacksonville that many people have heard of because they do a lot of education stuff. They do a lot of meetups and RIAs and groups. And they have a few of our team members doing outbound marketing. And he sent me a text not very long ago, about a month ago, where they did their third deal this year where they're netting over $100,000 on a wholesale deal because our teams are sitting there pounding the phones because they're doing such a good job on it. And so it doesn't take very many of those deals to really cover your expenses and for it to become a net positive. And then, a lot of companies just they're pretty good on the sales and marketing side. They're pretty good at actually getting contracts, but on the back end, whether it's transaction management, so doing dispositions or transaction coordination or social media management, just the ability to have somebody come in and perform all of those tasks at a really high level. And the difference today, Paul, about outsourcing, and again, not just with us, it doesn't matter whether you're using Rocket Station or hiring on your own, the results should be the same, in that you don't have to compromise on a one-to-one basis. You can find in every one of these jobs, whether it's inside sales, marketing, customer support, bookkeeping, social media management, your IT positions that need to be filled, you can find somebody in all over the world, essentially. And through us, we just collate and congregate what we feel like is the best talent, but you can do it directly on your own. So where you're not compromising, where you're getting the exact same equivalent, if not better, talent and workforce at a fraction of the cost. So there is a significant money savings. It is significantly less expensive, but the concept of having to sacrifice quality, that is no longer the case. And in 2021, going into 2022, it's just getting better and better because of technology and access to talent. And so the idea should be that the person, whether they're sitting right in your office or you're outsourcing and delegating that task to another person, it should feel like they're sitting right there, whether in Boston where you guys are, or Texas where we are, or California. Any of those tasks or roles that I just mentioned, or what any of our clients are doing, there shouldn't be a sacrifice in the quality of the workforce. Your expectation should be to get every bit, whether you're hiring stateside or internationally.
Great. So back to the topic of the episode, as we walk through your life, how you were raised, the decisions you've made, when you think of legacy, what do you think of, and what type of legacy would you like to leave?
Yeah, for me, I just like to think about the relationships that I have in my life. And when the people that I care about and that I love, when those people are closest to me, I feel like I'm doing a good job. And when I'm expanding on those relationships, and those relationships are positive and healthy and full of love, connection and commitment, then I feel like I'm doing a good job. So what I'm most excited about is, as the company grows, we expand our community projects. It's called Rocket Station Cares, and these are led by our team members. They get to come up with quarterly different projects, whether that's sponsoring schools, healthcare initiatives, putting on, different events that for community awareness and different aspects of positive change within their community. So they come up with ideas, and then as a company, we obviously support that and lead that from a finance standpoint, but then it's totally a free choice thing for our teams to participate in. And they just love that. And as we grow and we get to grow our community cares projects and Rocket Station Cares projects, that's what I'm most excited about. That's what I get to spend a lot of my time these days. And so I don't usually think about legacy in that way, but I guess that for me right now is the way that I'm trying to leave an impact and hopefully allow our team members to have a platform to create their own impact and their own legacy. And for me, that is kind of what it's all about for me personally. If I can create the opportunity for others to have the same impact and the same things that I get to feel, which is just gratitude, love, and appreciation every single day, then to me, I think I'm doing pretty good. So I don't really think about it maybe the way most people think about it yet. But for me, it's just like if the people that are close to me in my life are getting closer to me and those relationships are getting better and I'm creating opportunity for more impact, then I'm doing okay.
Right. So for the listeners out there, what advice would you give them if they wanted to start thinking about legacy?
Yeah, I think that, again, I don't know if I'm good at advice, but I'll say for me personally, what I changed was I'm always living in tomorrow and I have a tough time being present and living in the moment and being, I'm always pushing. And I would always thought about impact and change and platform for other people to create change as something that would happen in the future at some point. Like when I get, and I would use abstract, you know, when I get there or, you know, when I get stable or whenever, whatever happens, then I'll start looking into some of these different philanthropic things. And for me, the more that I gave, the more, not just financial, but my own time, energy, effort from an authentic standpoint into these projects, then everything else kind of fell into place. And so for me, the more I made that something now, instead of waiting to do in the future at some arbitrary point, even if it was just, you know, donating a little bit of my time and energy to help and give back in the communities. Anytime I was doing something outside of myself, everything in my life kind of fell into place. And so I don't really have advice, I don't think. And I'm assuming it's kind of similar for other people, is when I'm happiest, it's when I'm in service to other people. So instead of waiting for those days, instead of making that a future thing, I would encourage people to start thinking about finding ways to put others first and serve others through in your community right now and see the impact and change it'll come to your life.
Well, thank you. I know that wasn't supposed to be advice, but that was really good advice. all right. This has been a pleasure, Robert. For the listeners out there, where can we find you and follow you?
Yeah, our website's rocketstation.com. So I think there's some pretty good information there. And anybody that's honest and sincere about this process, I don't care if you hire our teams, but we'll spend 30 and 45 minutes with you answering questions about you and your business specifically. And just click that schedule time now button, but say that you heard me on Paul's podcast. So make sure that you spend a little bit of time with us, but mention that you heard us on the podcast. So I'll know where you came from and happy to share anything that we've got for you. I'm on Instagram, I'm on Facebook. So welcome to reach out there, but really the business development team, they're the ones that know everything. So check out our website, rocketstation.com, click that schedule time now button and we'll give you whatever we've got.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Legacy Podcast. Now, if you can do us a favor and leave a review, any type of stars on any platform that you use, it would be greatly appreciated. For more information about us, the other co-hosts, and the Legacy Podcast, go to businesslegacypodcast.com. That's businesslegacypodcast.com. Have a great day.